I'm sure the astute among you noticed that we only read one reading before the gospel today. This is, in fact, completely rubrical. In our prayer book, it says that we should read one reading before the gospel, and we always read the gospel at a Eucharistic service, Jesus being the reason for that. And the thing is it's just so rare that we have the opportunity to read a whole story, a really good narrative chunk, beginning to end, from the Hebrew Bible, that I really couldn't pass this one up. Many of us, of course, remember the story of David and Goliath from Sunday school, the dramatic story of an underdog taking out the champion of the Philistines. And yes, this is the David who goes on to be king of Israel. Although today we are meeting him as a young man, really probably no more than a teenager. Think like scrawny high school freshman, although the text mentions he's very good looking. This scrawny high school freshman stepping up to slay a giant, who apparently at 6 cubits and a span is almost 7 feet tall, certainly NBA material, and probably unfathomably huge for David's place and time. I want to say that most of this sermon is drawn from my friend John Omer's book, Slaying Your Goliaths, which we did do a formation series on a while back. John does this fabulous close reading of this text and begins with the point that this is not a story about David's triumph over Goliath, but a story about God's protection of David, and how David's God confidence, his trust in his God, unlocks the powerful potential of that protection. As John points out, we're attracted to this story not only because of the drama, it's just a spectacularly told story, but because all of us face Goliaths in our lives, problems that seem so big, so unbelievably huge, that we are tempted to, just like the Israelite army, do nothing, to shrink back in fear and not even begin to engage. We didn't read this part. The really astute among you will notice that even though we read a really long continuous chunk, certain bits were kind of omitted to keep us moving. We didn't read this part, but as the story kind of kicks off today, the Israelites and the Philistines have come to both sides of sort of a valley. And what they're doing is they're standing up on either side, completely afraid. No one dares to go into the valley to begin the battle until Goliath comes down from the Philistines. They're just completely stalled out on either side. No one on the Israelite side wants to engage with Goliath. He's using his words, this negative trash talk, again, NBA material, to keep them intimidated, to keep them from doing anything. And we all face Goliaths like this, do we not? Individually, societally, these huge problems, these daunting tasks, which tap into our most negative self-talk, the tapes that play over and over again that tell us we're not enough, we're not good enough, strong enough, wealthy enough, smart enough, we're not enough. They speak words of slander that cut us to the quick and just sap out our fighting spirit. Maybe for you, your Goliath is some big thorny issue at work, something you know you need to move or act on, but how? Maybe your Goliath is in your home or in your family life, an issue or a figure who seems far too big to be mentioned, let alone dealt with. Maybe it's something else. Maybe you're thinking of a world or a national problem or something you can't even name yet. My point is that we all face these seemingly insurmountable tasks, which seem impossible to confront, which we cannot even dream of defeating. So the question, of course, is where does this guy David get off? Where does his confidence come from? How does he get the idea that he, who is too young to even serve in the army, he's been left behind in the pastures while all of his brothers go to serve. Why is he, who's bringing food from home, be the one to head down the slope and take on Goliath? Well, we read that David remembers how he has defeated other obstacles in this path. In this case, he thinks about the animals who threatened his flock, who he was able to take out with his sling. But he doesn't just remember that he defeated those past giants. What he says is that God protected him and saw him through those struggles. He puts his confidence in the God who brought him through those obstacles, who protected him from what he had faced before. In other words, God's past faithfulness inspires David's present faith in God. And maybe you too can think of something in your life, some trial or issue or obstacle, that at one point seemed so huge as to you as to seem insurmountable. But now it lies in the past, It is far behind you. Can you remember how God brought you through that? And does that not inspire you? Inspire you to take action once again? The knowledge that God, who put you through that prior struggle, is still by your side today, can be the very thing that gets you down into the valley to compete. The most compelling part of this story to me, however, is what David does once he has resolved to fight Goliath. Saul, who really only just wants the best for David at this point, gets worse from here, in part because what is best for David is at this point the best for Saul and his army and his nation. Saul offers David his own armor and his own weapons. And David rejects them. He puts them aside. What works for Saul, right, what would have served Saul in this same fight against this same enemy, does not serve David. He says, I can't move in this. I can't walk in this. And so David politely declines. How many times do we in our struggles find ourselves offered the same tools, the same strategies that work for other people? It's usually completely well-intentioned, right? This worked for me. Maybe it'll work for you. But often what worked for someone else does not work as well for us. As John Omer writes, we find ourselves clothed in long-standing customs, wearing other people's mentalities, rules, regulations, concepts, or structures. And they are fine. They worked for other people. Maybe they even worked for us in the past. But as David shows us, sometimes to make progress on this present Goliath, this present day's struggle, sometimes you have to put those things aside. Rejecting someone else's armor and tools can be the first step towards finding what works for you. Although, be warned, what works for you might not be as glamorous as what you were just offered. Instead of Saul's royal armor, which would have been made by the finest craftsmen around, David reverts to what he uses in the pasture with his flock, his simple tools of his staff and his sling. And he goes to the wadi, a ravine or a channel that's dry unless it's the rainy season, and he chooses 5 smooth, ordinary stones. Simple stuff. David goes after Goliath with what he already has on hand, his staff, his sling, some stones he found. The question then for us is, what is in your hand? What are you already carrying or already good at? What wisdom or expertise do you already have to bring down the slope to fight your Goliath? With that in hand, with your 5 smooth stones selected, you are just about ready to enter the battle. But then I want to remind you of how I began this exegesis, which is saying that this is not a story about David. Full stop. This is not a story about David defeating Goliath. It is a story of God protecting David in his battle with Goliath. And that God is not the same God as the false gods of the Philistines. It's not the same God as the false gods of our world, the idols that we ascribe too much power to. This is not the false God of wealth, of fame, or technology. Not the false God of our own autonomy or self-reliance. This is the capital G God, the one true God, the one who calms the sea and the storm in our Mark passage. The same God who drew the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt and sent them across the Red Sea. The same God who in the person of Jesus calms the storm around the disciples on the Sea of Galilee. And that same God is at your side today as you gird up to face your Goliath. What we need is to face our biggest battles not so much with a dose of self-confidence, but a double portion of what John Omer calls God confidence. That is faith in God alone. Self-confidence, John writes, is fragile because anything that makes us think less of ourselves undermines it. God confidence, however, is solid because anything that makes us think of ourselves less means that more of our mind is free to think about God and about others. Get that? God confidence is solid. And that God confidence is what carries David down into the valley to face and defeat that Goliath. God confidence is what carried Moses and the Israelites across the Red Sea with the Egyptians in hot pursuit. God confidence is what carried the disciples first to the foot of the cross and then out to carry the gospel to all corners of the world. with the caveat, of course, that we read today in the story in the Gospel of Mark, God confidence doesn't just come to us naturally all the time. God confidence can take a lifetime, because it's essentially the journey of discipleship, of learning how to follow Jesus, of patterning our steps and our lives after him. And that's why we are here today, to sing, to worship, to be nourished with Christ's body and blood. We are here to affirm that we know who God is, and God knows who we are. We're here to continue to build up our confidence, our trust, by worshiping the God of David, the God of Moses, the God of the disciples, and the God who claims us and who we claim today. We are here today to work on our God confidence so that we can be ready to go out there into the valley, to reject what has worked for others but will not work for us, to select our 5 smooth stones so that we, with our tools in hand and our God by our side, we too can defeat our Goliaths. Amen.